E1, number 35A.
So we see that within such a flow chart, thought is made to follow a certain flow, a certain line, and therefore will flow from one aspect of the chart to another aspect of the chart, but not just always in the linear or vertical way as it is on the chart, because it can reflect each other part too. If we consider this, then we begin to realize what it really means to have a calculus in being. If you have perhaps your definitions here, which I gave you at the beginning of the week, and I said we need them again at the end of the week. If you take out that page called Some Definitions and you look page two, I have there two new terms. Oh, well, it's rather well-known calculus, which Mrs. Eddy uses, that thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. It speaks about the spiritual calculus. A calculus, according to Webster, is a process of reasoning by the use of symbols. Now, a treatment is naturally a process of reasoning, and we reason somehow still in symbols, but naturally the higher the symbols are, the better. The more super symbols we can use, the more all-embracing our consciousness is. So if we use the symbols of the capitalized terms, we get the divine infinite calculus, because the capitalized terms stand for the infinite and for the divine. So that's why Mrs. Eddy calls that the thought accepts the divine infinite calculus, namely the divine infinite process of reasoning. So we called usually that process of reasoning a calculus, but in cybernetics they have a term called algorithm, which they use more and more. And you have on your definition that term algorithm, on which I want to speak for a few minutes. Algorithm is not a new term, but it is coming into use only lately, because algorithm is a term that is used in mathematics since many, many hundred years, and comes from an Arabic mathematician or who was somehow called Algorizos or something like that, and from his name was taken the algorithm. An algorithm, as it is stated here, is a system of symbols. Can you see the chart is really a system of symbols? We have very defined, identified symbols. Put those symbols into a system, given them place value in the chart, so it's a system of symbols. Connected, and this makes it different than a calculus, connected according to pre-established rules. Bertrand Lanfi, who is really one of the father of the general system theories, writes in one of his books, he writes quite nicely about this algorithm. Actually, the English edition is a bit shorter than the German edition in this aspect here. He says, given a suitable set of symbols, we would have our symbols. That is a vocabulary. You know, we have that new language. Our capitalized term language could therefore be called our new vocabulary. It's therefore a meta language. the language of spirit, perhaps we could call, or that which approximates the language of spirit the nearest. We have a vocabulary, and then given suitable rules of the game, namely a grammar, symbols can be handled as tokens of the things they represent. They stand for reality. Those symbols which we use are tokens for reality. And that eventually a result drops out, the effect of it, by the use of symbols. A result drops out which was unforeseeable to the individual mind with its limited capacities. What he brings out when you read the book is quite interesting, that namely he says that we shouldn't call man the Homo sapiens, Homo sapiens, the wise man. He said there is something much wiser than man, namely the ability to use symbols, and the right use of symbols have much more intelligence in it than what we have with our limited capacities. But if we know the symbols and know the rules, therefore the vocabulary and the grammar, then the right use of the symbols will bring to us insights which we could never have seen or imagined or thought out. That the symbols within themselves and the right use of the symbols through that algorithm bring to light completely new insights. I always like to take that very simple symbol statement of Einstein. I think there is practically no law so simple as Einstein's big law of energy. It only says energy E equal mc square. So it only has three factors in it, actually only two factors, namely m and c square. That energy equals mass multiplied by the speed of the second power of the speed of light. Now, if you look at that and know how to use those symbols, you could come as one of the many, 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 many spin-offs of that one. You could come to the conclusion that there exists in reality no straight lines. Isn't it amazing that you talk about a symbol which has to do with energy and with mass and with the speed of light, and one of the spin-off is that there exists no straight line in reality, which means that the whole Euclidean geometry does not exist in reality. Can you think about that? And it's very simple. If you know how to use your symbols, you arrive at that. Now, Einstein didn't go out to find a new geometry. He didn't go out to find out that such a thing does not exist as a straight line, as the shortest distance between two points. He didn't go out to prove that. He hadn't that in mind. That has been off, a drop out of this algorithm. Namely, that he could see that if light has mass, that the light has mass, that therefore every light is attracted to any mass. So that light which is used to measure a straight line is never a straight line, because that line is always attracted by the mass, either the mass of the earth or the mass of the sun or anything like that. So that there is a non-Euclidean geometry which states there are no parallel lines, there are no straight lines, because every nearest connection between two points is always curved, because it's always through gravitational mass attracted to a mass, whatever that mass is. See, they could find it out, prove his findings years and years after he has stated it, when once there was a constellation where a star that was behind the sun and the light should come to the earth, didn't come to the earth until a few seconds later, because the light was attracted, that went by the sun, was attracted by the mass of the sun, and therefore made a curve. And so only reached us when the star was already quite away from the sun. So it made a curved line towards the sun. And this is true, naturally, from the of the earth, that everything that has a straight line from here to there, a light is attracted by the mass of the earth. Naturally, that attraction is usually so small that we can neglect it. But it has then been shown that in order to investigate the universe, and later on, because there are similar proportions within the atom, that with the old Euclidean geometry we wouldn't get anywhere anymore. Can you see what an algorithm means? Why? Oh yes, I said that Bertrand Lanfi says we shouldn't really call man in distinction with the animal, the Homo sapiens, that he's very wise. Sapiens come from knowing. But he said we should really call man the Homo symbolicus. The Homo symbolicus, namely the man who can reason with symbols, who can use symbols. Because it says the use of symbols, they are really giving us new insights. So, that's what we feel really is happening when we understand the chart. It's a symbol language, we have a vocabulary, and we have a grammar. We have a grammar, we have seen the fundamental calculus which really exists within the chart. How the word leads to the Christ to Christianity, Christianity to science, how the four orders are giving a certain way of spiritual calculation, the four levels give us a spiritual calculation, and so all the rules together, that's the algorithm. All the rules together is showing us how to use that vocabulary. Again, let's read it now in this aspect again and see. Given a suitable set of symbols, that is a vocabulary, capitalized terms, and given suitable rules of the game, a grammar, our calculus, symbols can be handled as tokens of the things they represent. They represent reality itself, spiritual reality itself. Eventually, a result drops out. That's what is the result of a treatment. We come to a point where we stop our treatment, where we feel, now I got it. Now I have seen the answer. Drops out, which was unforeseeable. We may not have, when we start the treatment, we do not know where we end. We never know where we end. Because the flow will lead us according to the given rules. Naturally, we have now to know the rules and laws. We have now to know the laws of each one of those boxes in the chart, which was unforeseeable to the individual mind with its limited capacities. So the flow chart will help us to surmount to surpass our limitations of the human mind. And therefore, the divine flow will lead thought so that it is not directed according to the human mind's directions. Or you take the definition from the Encyclopedia of Cybernetics. There they define algorithm like this: a general, clearly defined process. You see, a generally, clearly defined process for the automatic solution of all problems, within a certain range. See, that's what an algorithm does. An algorithm states within a certain range. Now, we have here a very certain range, namely the whole reference of a system of being. Our big chart is the range within all problems. That's what we said. We should be able, with the chart, to be able to tackle any problem, positive problem, negative problem. But it's a process for the automatic solution. It's therefore something which we don't have to do, which we only have to witness, so to say. Yes, you put out the H, yes. Automatic, it's a printing mistake there. Automatic should be automatic. So the algorithm, the divine algorithm, which would be another term for spiritual treatment, but for that spiritual treatment in which the human mind does not outline how to think divinely, where the human mind does not draw any conclusion from the problem to the idea behind it, where the human mind does not draw conclusion from a proposition and state what the proposition is, but let the proposition go and see that it is always a structural problem. Now we come back to structuralism. That structuralism takes any problem and puts it first as a point of intersection of multivarious categories, so that the divine algorithm just starts out by putting the problem right behind us and starts listening to the divine flow. And then let that flow lead us from one point to the other until it builds up within one's consciousness a point where we feel completely at rest, or where we have that drop out. It's not a really nice term, the drop out here. It's a result that falls into our lap. That's what it is meant by drops out. It falls right into our lap by grace and not by human thinking. Yes, this would be the divine algorithm, the divine treatment. Actually, it's too late now to start with one of these main examples, so I think we stop here. Now, we were saying this morning that we would like to make a few of those flow charts. So take one of the charts you have in front of you, and I draw on the overhead projector the flow of it. Now, fundamentally, we must distinguish between two very big categories of flow charts. The first category is a category on a general understanding of the chart itself. It is, so to say, the fundamental exercise which we can make in order to understand the whole chart. And then in the second category, we have the application in individual treatment. I take first two or three examples of the first category, namely a flow chart. That one can always make the same way. Therefore, a flow chart which you can use actually the way we are thinking it out together, whereas later on it will be different. In this first category, we take a first example, and that is the way of understanding the one being. How thought flows if right out from ignorance we are faced with the question, how can I systematically culture my understanding so as to reach a full comprehension of the Infinite One? So it is the way of understanding. The way of understanding always starts naturally with the word in Christian Science, because the word in Christian Science is that statement where God's nature is presented to human thought, as we have seen. And so there is no use of trying to understand the Infinite One if we don't know first the answer to the question, what is God? So we start here in Christian Science with the word, with mind. I make a little cross where I start, and I learn to understand the definition of God. This is really how the whole development has developed step by step over the last, well, mainly in the 40s, when John Dorley was beginning to investigate the synonymous terms. And so what we do in this first exercise is really to follow within a half an hour or so now the whole line of light as it was leading John Dorley's thought through those years around about 1938-39 up to 49. Within those 10 years, really, thought was investigating first the definition of God, the Word. So we went all along the Word from mind to love. He began to realize that this is the fundamental statement of the nature of God, where to human thought was presented the fact, and now I start with mind, the very fact that God is the divine mind, therefore that which alone knows, understands, comprehends, that God, mind, is the divine intelligence, the all-knowing mind. This led to the nature of spirit to see that this all-knowing mind or intelligence is the only substance of being, spirit. And that spirit would unfold the intelligence of mind in an ordered way. In an ordered way, how? And he began to see that the nature of God as soul would give identity, definiteness, to this unfoldment and understanding. that soul is spiritual understanding, unchangeable identity, sinless, definite. And so thought grasps some measure of the divine nature of God as that unchangeable identity, that one untouchable, unchangeable ego. Principle then presents to that consciousness the fact that mind, spirit, and soul is the principle of being. That mind, spirit, soul constitute now the fundamental basis from which everything stems and from which everything is demonstrated in system and science. And what is being demonstrated is really the eternality of that principle, namely life, the exaltation of life, the endlessness, timelessness of life. And that life is the only awareness of being, truth, the consciousness of being. So that we get the sense that being itself is truth, namely an inner awareness of itself. And this led to the last synonymous term of love, where one feels that because truth is aware of itself, it is always aware of itself as a whole and therefore holy or perfect. And you get the sense of love as the perfection of being, the fulfilled sense of this sequence.